I'm David Brown, and this is Business Wars. Today, we conclude our series, Harley and the Biker Wars. The Milwaukee-based company is an American legend, but it's fought hard for that title, fending off rival companies, bankruptcy, and even the Hell's Angels. Harley-Davidson survived government trust-busting and the onslaught of sleeker and cheaper Japanese bikes made by Yamaha and Honda. Biker riots, world wars, recessions and depressions, you name it, this company's seen it all. Hundreds of motorcycle companies have come and gone, but it's Harley-Davidson that has stood the test of time. Its heavy, loud bikes came to embody freedom and the American dream. But in the past few years, Harley has seen its ridership dwindle. Baby boomers, once the largest generation of die-hard hog fans, they're increasingly aging out of the sport. Today, younger buyers want sleeker, lighter, and cheaper bikes. The company has often been criticized for not changing with the times. But this fall, it is set to publicly release its first electric motorcycle, the LiveWire. It's a huge shift for the century-old company. It goes from 0 to 60 in 3 seconds, making it the fastest Harley-Davidson ever. It's also the first global motorcycle brand to make an electric bike. But question is, will its bet pay off? Our guest on today's episode is Bradley Brownell. He's a contributor to Jalopnik.com, and Bradley recently got a chance to test drive Harley's LiveWire. We'll talk with Bradley about his test drive, as well as the larger electric motorcycle market and the future of the industry. Bradley Brownell, welcome to Business Wars.
Thank you for having me.
You've gotten to be something of a part of history. I know that you've test driven Harley's new LiveWire, which is the cutting edge of Harley-Davidson. How did it feel?
It was very exciting. I mean, it did feel like the future. It was something completely different from anything Harley's done before, and it was a blast.
Harley's well known for having a particular kind of feel that's unlike any other motorcycle. It's big, it's burly, it's heavy. You can feel the vibrations of the engine, and that's intentional. When you get on a LiveWire, does it feel like a Harley?
In a way, it does, but in others, it doesn't. So stylistically, they attempted to add something of like the Peanut Tank Sportster to that cover on top where, you know, a gas tank would normally be. Mm-hmm. There are a few things like the switchgear and the mirrors that are carried over from other Harley models. They're obviously still using the belt drive, and that was intentional because they've been using that since the 1980s. But everything else feels completely different. You know, you've got... This is their sportiest bike. It's got the most lean-over angle of any bike that Harley's ever produced. It's probably their quickest bike that they've potentially ever made with a 3.1 second 0 to 60.
Yeah.
So the LiveWire weighs about 550 pounds without a rider. That is a little heavier than other Street Fighter style bikes. You know, you've got Triumphs and Ducatis and that type of thing. Those are in the 450 to 500 range. So it's not that much heavier, but it is, you know, noticeably different. But otherwise, it feels like something entirely new. There's not much Harley DNA in this bike. I mean, Harley engineers have been working on it for over a decade, and they definitely did turn out a home run, but it doesn't feel like anything they've done before.
In fact, if you were to squint, or maybe if you were a little bit, nearsighted or something, it would look a little bit more like a Japanese bike, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, you could say that for sure. Or at least an Italian. I see a lot of like Ducati Street Fighter in it or something
right,
like that.
Right.
Yeah, it definitely is a very rider-forward, sporty ride experience. Something that's completely foreign to the Harley lineup.
It's interesting. I remember seeing the first YouTubes, and it doesn't sound anything like that potato, potato, potato that you get with the old V-twins.
Yeah, that's true. It sounds, as I would describe it, a little bit like George Jetson's car. It's got a gear whine with, you can hear the belt drive, you can hear the brakes working, you can hear the tires on the road, but there's not a lot of engine noise. And this is actually the second development of the Livewire engine or motor. They had a different motor before that they used, and they, you know, as technology has advanced, they've moved to a different style. So this production-ready one is very good.
You say that it has this gear whine. To me, it sounds like a jet.
Yeah, there is a bit of that. I mean, it's a 90-degree beveled gear coming out of the electric motor and going to the drive sprocket for the belt drive. And so that 90-degree bevel is what's creating a lot of that noise. And to Harley's credit, they engineered in some of that noise to that gear. So it's intentional that it sounds like a jet engine, I'm sure.
Yeah. But what about the range? I mean, that's what has a lot of people sort of anxious about jumping on board to the future too quick.
Sure, sure. Yeah. It's not going to be a long distance touring bike. It's not going to be your, BMW that you hop on the highway and run for 200 miles. The range is not awesome, but it is, I think, enough. I actually rode to the studio today on a Indian Scout Bobber, and that has a range of about 90 miles, which is more or less about the same as what the Livewire would be, in regular everyday.
Yeah, maybe all this hoo-ha about range is, I don't know, maybe much ado about nothing, but I think this gets at the larger issue that sort of underpins a lot of the conversations that we've been having as we've been exploring, you know, Harley versus the rest of the world. And that is, Harley Davidson has forever been taking on challenges to its title. I mean, back in the day, of course, Indian was a different sort of contender. Mm-hmm. But nowadays, Harley is, by many descriptions, in trouble. What's going on under the bar and shield?
Well, I think it's indicative of what's going on in the whole motorcycle industry. And sales, new bike sales are down in general. You've got more riders than ever, which is a statistic that's been put out by DOT. They're saying there's more people with motorcycle licenses than ever before, but there are fewer new bikes sold every year. So a lot of people are riding older bikes, they're buying used bikes, they're buying scooters, that type of thing, but new motorcycle sales are just down across the board.
Well, you know, I wonder how much of this has to do with the global population sort of trending toward urban living. I mean, you hear Harley's current CEO, Matt Levatich, saying that he wants to focus on meeting the needs of that urban demographic. I think of Harley motorbikes as sort of rangy, big, beefy, long cruising machines, right?
Absolutely.
Are we looking at, I mean, will Harley be able to stand out and be successful with this Livewire strategy? You know, that bike costs $30,000.
Yeah, there's a few things there. For one thing, I think that their strategy of focusing on urban environments is maybe a little short-sighted because the charging infrastructure just isn't there. For the most part, people are going to be charging in their own home garages. So if you live in New York City and you don't have a garage, chances are you're not going to be able to just rock up to, you know, some street parking place and charge up. Until that infrastructure is there, I'm not sure that it will be an urban bike, but a suburban to maybe commute into urban traffic. And being electric, it's ostensibly better for the environment.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/.
Tools and Weapons is a podcast exploring the promise and the peril of the digital age, hosted by Microsoft's vice chair and president, Brad Smith. His latest guest is Bayer CEO Bill Anderson.
Though many of us know Bayer for its pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science with the goal of making sure no one on planet Earth goes hungry. On Tools and Weapons, Brad and Bill talk about how the German company is using artificial intelligence paired with CRISPR technology to increase food production without fertilizers. Their efforts put AI and digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre on a hotter, more crowded planet. It's the latest conversation in a series that invites listeners to pull up a front row seat to some of the most important developments in technology today. You can check out this episode and a whole lot more of Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts.
Are motorcycle enthusiasts concerned that much about the environment?
It's a tough question to answer because I think everyone has their own concerns. For the most part, I would say not necessarily. People who have traditionally been motorcycle riders, their bikes generally have less of an impact on the environment than a car would. So they already kind of see, especially the more modern fuel-injected bikes with catalysts and that type of thing, those are already much more fuel-efficient and much more pollutant-free than driving a car would be. There are always, especially in the enthusiast community, there are always those who completely disregard it and don't really care, and they ride bikes because they're enjoying themselves.
But I guess you're not really talking about the guys who sort of dress up like pirates on the weekend. And you know what I'm talking about.
Sure.
With the patches and the big, heavy leather jackets. And this, the LiveWire is not made for that crowd. And it seems like the LiveWire is more than a tacit acknowledgement that something fundamental is changing in the typical, maybe not just Harley rider, but motorcycle rider.
Absolutely. I think that's entirely the case. You've got Harley has acknowledged that their existing consumer base is getting older. And it's hard to continue to market to a, you know, for lack of a better word, disappearing target market. So they've got to change fundamentally who the company is, what the company stands for.
Yeah.
They have this long heritage that they can pull from. But there's a wholesale change in what people want out of a motorcycle, and continuing to play to that existing market clearly isn't an operable strategy for them. So I see that they're targeting well-to-do suburbanites. You're looking at your doctors, lawyers, accountants, that type of thing, because to be fair, a $30,000 toy is a lot of money for the average Joe. So they're targeting probably, in my eyes, the same kinds of people that were early adopters to a Tesla. So I think that they're kind of coming at it in a similar fashion where they're putting a recognizable name on a sort of fringe product and marketing it as the next new big thing. So it is the future. And you have to get early adopters on board. And in order to turn that profit, they have to charge a high price for it. So,
yeah.
And when you consider, I mean, there are definitely other sport bikes out there that are $30,000 and people don't seem to have that much of an aversion to paying those prices.
You know, what I hear you saying, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but I get the sense if I read between the lines that what Harley's strategy is about is not so much that they're banking on some kind of, you know, the environmentally friendly motorcycle. What it seems like they're doing is they're looking for that next demographic that will buy motorcycles, and they assume that those individuals are going to be younger, they're going to be more environmentally conscious, shall we say, and that will have a premium unto itself.
Sure, yeah. And realistically, you're looking at something that is a tech toy. If you're the type of guy that goes out and buys the newest iMac and the newest iPhone, or, you know, you have name brand appliances and you have fancy tech things that you show off to all your friends. If your refrigerator door has a big connection to the internet on it, then maybe you're the kind of guy that would be interested in a LiveWire, because it is a window into the future.
I see what you're saying. Well, what about Ducati or Triumph or Honda? I mean, they were content back in the old days to let Harley sort of blaze the trail, and then they came and did their own thing, and in many respects kind of fine-tuned what Harley did. Ducati had its own twin, so did Triumph, although they had a parallel twin. Mm-hmm. Honda took that big cruiser thing and made it a four-cylinder and turned the motorcycling world upside down. What are Harley's competitors doing? Are they involved in the EV or electric vehicle space?
Well, I mean, there are a bunch of manufacturers that are developing their own EV bikes right now. Honda has some off-road bikes that are in the prototype stage. Ducati says that they've got an electric bike that's ready to launch any day now, but I haven't heard anything about it in about six months. There are existing players in the electric segment. You've got Zero in Northern California, and you've got Energica in Italy. Those are the two most aligned with what's going on with the LiveWire. And there are a few other fringe ones out there that are less well-known, but there seems to be a lot of hype about electric motorcycles and this being the way forward. So I think there are a lot of manufacturers that are, if not just exploring, already working on bikes for the electric market.
Now that you've actually ridden it, I wonder, do you think that electric bikes, I mean, you say it's the future, but what's holding it back? I mean, is it just the availability of charging stations? Is it the range? Is it something, I mean, if it were just about speed and torque, these bikes have a lot of speed and a lot of torque. So what's keeping it from just exploding?
I think that charging infrastructure is definitely one of the things that people are concerned about. It's still reasonably difficult to go on a road trip on a LiveWire or even in an electric car. The charging times is one thing that people seem to be severely concerned about. Personally, I'm not. But when you look at a charging time, especially in the case of the LiveWire, it's 40 minutes to 80%. So if you are on a ride and you stop for quote-unquote fuel to recharge, you're probably going to want to get a bottle of water, go to the bathroom, those kinds of things. Get a stretch in anyway. Mm-hmm. So you're already looking at 20 to 30 minutes stationary. So what's another 10? Personally, that's my thinking of it. But there are people that are concerned about that. They see 40 minutes to refuel or to charge up, and they get turned off. You know, it takes 5 minutes to put gas in your tank. The LiveWire is not going to be something that you take off on an adventure on. It's more of a commute to work, couple of days a week, and save some money on fuel.
You know, it's funny, though, because as you say that, I think to myself, you know, a lot of people get into motorcycling, though, not because they're looking for a lighter way to commute. A lot of people get into it because of a kind of mythology, a kind of fantasy. I mean, Harley Davidson rode back to fortune on a wave of nostalgia, right? And there was this idea that in a way, when you bought a Harley Davidson, you were buying into James Dean and jukeboxes and rock and roll and, you know, all of that. And the question, it seems, for the motorcycle industry, as I hear you talking about it, is not so much a practical question. As you say, it's about, you know, these are toys.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
You don't have to have a motorcycle. That, at least for a large segment, this is about buying into a mythology or a cool factor.
Yeah. I mean, for the majority of people out there, motorcycles don't make any sense. If I was to ask my mother if she should buy a motorcycle, she would stomp her feet and say, no way. But those of us who ride know what it feels like. You know, it's the wind in your hair. It's that crazy feeling of being almost flying, but on two wheels. So there's nothing about a motorcycle purchase that's rational. You're looking at this through the eyes of, I want this, not I need this. So yeah, I don't think anyone needs a LiveWire, but you'd be crazy if you ride it and don't want it.
You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days. As business owners and managers, you use software for your business every day. You use one piece of software to manage your customers, another to manage your employees, another to manage your finances, and the list goes on. You buy these pieces independently and hope they fit neatly together like a puzzle. And then you find out the hard way that they don't, and you end up with a mess at the heart of your business operations. Does any of this sound familiar? Well, fortunately, Zoho offers a solution to this chaos. It's called Zoho One. Zoho One is a suite of around 50 pre-integrated business applications that fit together beautifully. So instead of dealing with disparate software from multiple vendors with multiple contracts and price points, you deal with one vendor with all the pieces of the business software puzzle neatly put together, offered at a very attractive price. Now, if this sounds interesting to you, you got to check out Zoho One at zoho.one. That's Zoho.one. With Zoho, you're not just licensing apps. You're licensing peace of mind. Just in looking at the live wire and the YouTube videos and reading what you've written about it and what others have written about it, it sounds really tantalizing. But I wonder whether or not these bikes, whether from Harley or eventually from Ducati and Honda and Triumph and others, will ever inspire that same sort of electric, pardon the pun, that same sort of electric desire that a rumbling V-twin engine or some large displacement gas-powered engine does. I mean, there is something, and I know you felt this, something about seeing the mirrors shaking, you know, about it's not just the wind in your hair, but that there's something visceral that's happening. The smell of the gasoline is exciting.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's always going to be a place for internal combustion engine motorcycles, whether or not it's a vintage one that someone has restored or if they're still available new in the future. I'm not, you know, I can't predict the future. But it is a different riding experience, but I think that it's on par with or equal to the visceralness of riding an internal combustion engine bike. There is just something there that you can ride through the forest and you can hear the birds chirping and you can hear your tires gripping on the asphalt and you can hear the brakes grabbing when you're going down into the corner and you can hear the shift in the electric motor when it goes from power deployment to regen. So there's a lot of stuff going on that even though it's not that loud V-twin or four-cylinder or whatever, it is still a deeply visceral feeling.
You know, I'm wondering if maybe there needs to be a kind of Easy Rider type film or something. I mean, you know, Peter Fonda passed away not that long ago, but it's hard to ignore the fact, you know, that Captain America motorcycle stuck in the minds of an entire generation, and that generation happened to be the one that brought Harley Davidson back into its glory days.
Yeah, maybe.
What do you think? I mean, is it possible that the electric motorcycle can inspire that same sort of obviously not nostalgia, but that same sort of excitement?
Yeah, I think it's perhaps the reverse. Instead of nostalgia, you're seeing what could be, what is coming. this is something that's different than anything that's ever been around before. Or, I mean, there have been other electric bikes in the past.
Sure.
Where you're transporting yourself into another world where everything is quiet and clean. The great thing about this bike is that there's no shifter, there's no clutch, you're never in the wrong gear. So especially on some really great backcountry roads, I mean, you're not going to risk downshifting too far and locking up your rear tire or anything like that, which is a total noob move. But, you know, we all make mistakes. But being always in the right gear is great because you're at the corner apex. You're just worried about your lean. You're just worried about focusing on what's on the road ahead. It takes one extra thing off of your mind and allows you to just hammer down. It's a totally different experience, but still totally cool.
In theory, this should be great for the motorcycling industry writ large, right? I mean, people talk about how some millennials, and I don't want to feed into the stereotypes, but a certain aversion to risk. A lot of younger people don't even like to drive anymore. I mean, there's got to be something that would appeal, and it sounds like a device that is environmentally friendly, that's easy to ride, or certainly easier than its predecessors to ride. All of that adds up to something good, at least it would seem like, for the motorcycle industry at large and not just Harley-Davidson.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that it's an aversion to risk. I think that especially for, I mean, I am a millennial. My generation has had financial risk on the mind, especially since 2008.
Yeah.
So perhaps they haven't seen motorcycles as being a worthy investment or something should spend their money on. But as my generation become, you know, we're well into our professional years these days. I'm in my mid-30s. We have maybe some extra money laying around that we could afford to spend. Harley's monthly on this thing is probably going to be around $500, which, you know, sounds like a lot, but it sounds like a lot less than 30 grand when you put it in that perspective. So, yeah, I think that as this electric thing becomes the mainstream, I think it will be good for the motorcycle industry. For one thing, it'll be cleaner and you'll attract people who are concerned about that type of thing. And for another thing, it's quieter and cities are already too loud as it is. Mm-hmm. And for a third thing, it's less expensive to operate. There's, you know, you don't have to change the oil. You don't have to, I mean, you do, but not nearly as often.
Right.
You don't have to do valve adjustments or, you know, there's fewer moving parts, so you're not wearing things out as quickly. So, yeah, there's a potential for something like this in the future to be a economical way to get younger people into motorcycling. And I think this is the first step on that line. You know, this is we're at the point right now where we've moved maybe past the early adopters, or we're in the late stage of early adopters, and it's about to go mainstream. The charging infrastructure, as I said earlier, is the main hurdle for that. If you can get charging into the cities where you can charge overnight on a street lamp or something like that, that might be the big thing that pushes it over the edge.
I like that idea. That's a pretty interesting idea. So what do you think? Are we, in fact, at a turning point, or is this a lot of hype designed to sort of recapture or rekindle youthful excitement in an industry that might have run out of steam? What do you think?
I think it's a mixture of the two. I think there is a lot of hype behind this that, unless it is followed up with a second act that makes things a little more affordable and more mainstream, which Harley admittedly does say is coming. There's no word yet on when, but then it could all be just hype. But if Harley can deliver not only on the live wire, but on follow-ups and turn around the image as being only for old fuddy-duddies, then there could be something there for the brand. And I think that it is a piece of their long-term strategy that makes a lot of sense to me.
Bradley Brownell is a motorcycle enthusiast and an automotive journalist who lives in Reno, and I understand is a something of a self-professed collector of mostly awful automobiles as well.
Yeah, yes.
That's for another time. Bradley, it's been a real pleasure to get to say hello to you. Thanks so much for spending some time with us on Business Wars.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, Prime members, you can binge every episode of Business Wars ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey. From Wondery, this is Business Wars. We sure hope you enjoyed this episode. And coming up on our next series, we're flying in from the top rope with a look inside professional wrestling. Before World Wrestling Entertainment, WWE was the dominant name in sports entertainment. Most professional wrestlers were part of regional promotions with strict geographic boundaries. That is, until one brash promoter stepped in to shake up the wrestling world and demolish the status quo. The one and the only, Vince McMahon. We're going to explore how McMahon built his World Wrestling Federation empire and the war he waged on his biggest competitor, WCW. That's coming up next on Business Wars. I'm your host, David Brown. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor. Lee Hernandez is our special episodes producer. Adriana Cargill produced this episode, and our editor is Jenny Lauer-Beckman. Our executive producer is Marshall Louis, created by Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
Once upon a beat. Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me,
DJ Fuse,
and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the New Kids and Family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Once Upon a Beat.